I'm Arjoba Rustafelli Avenue. This is TabilePod.com and coming to you from our studios high atop Prospero's Books and Cafe. Today is Thursday, the 29th of March, 2012. On this date in 1549, the city of Salvador de Bahia, the first capital of Brazil, is founded. In 1776, Juan Batista de Anta arrives at the future site of San Francisco with 247 colonists. They camped in the Presidio. In 1857, Sepoy Mangalpadni of the 34th Regiment Bengal Native Infantry mutinies against the East India Company's rule in India and inspires a protracted Indian rebellion of 1857, also known as the Sepoy Mutiny. In 1882, the Knights of Columbus are established. In 1886, Dr. John Pemberton brews the first batch of Coca-Cola in a backyard in Atlanta, Georgia. In 1951, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg are convicted of conspiracy to commit espionage. In 1939, in Spain, the Republican Defenders of Madrid surrender, bringing to an end the three-year Spanish Civil War. In 1957, the New York, Ontario, and Western Railway makes its final run, the first major U.S. railroad to be abandoned in its entirety. In 1961, the 23rd Amendment to the United States Constitution is ratified, allowing residents of Washington, D.C. to vote in the presidential elections. In 1973, the last U.S. combat soldiers leave South Vietnam. In 1979, the nuclear reactor at Three Mile Island, Pennsylvania, overheats. In 2004, Bulgaria, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia join NATO as full members. Also on this date in 2004, the Republic of Ireland becomes the first country in the world to ban smoking in all workplaces, including bars and restaurants, which has now been done by almost all civilized countries, not including Georgia, by the way, as you'll notice if you visited. Birthdays today, Marios Vargas Llosa, Eugene McCarthy, and Bud Cort of Harold and Maude fame. If you haven't seen it, see it. Also on this date in 1899, well-known psychopathic jerk Laurenti Beria is born. And in 1928, critic and writer Akaki Bakradze is born. As well as in 1987, Akaki Shanidze, the renowned linguist, dies. Today it's just me, sorry about that, but you may have noticed our webpage. Thanks to Sebastian Henschel for organizing the whole thing, and thank you also to Matt Ellsburn, who did the old one from way back in the earliest days of podcasting. Matt made it all on his own, and it served us well for many years. Matt and Sebastian, thank you very, very, very much. In the new format, there are forums and all sorts of other things. I hope you like it. Be interested to hear what you think about it, whether it works well. Also, say something in one of the forums. Post something. You can use a fake name, just a little shout-out, whatever you want. Call yourself Mevludi Khajapuridze or something like that. But post something if you get the chance. So, last week we reported on a big mess at Tbilisi State. A couple weeks ago, we reported on a big mess at Tbilisi State University. Two students who were walking together with Tornike Ustarashvili, who blogs about university issues, were beaten up by members of the student council or students' organization. The blogger himself managed to escape and called the police. His two friends were dragged into some room which belongs to the student self-government, and were allegedly beaten by about 15 people. One of them later had to be hospitalized, was bleeding, and had a concussion. The student organization largely worked for the national movement, the ruling party at Tbilisi State University, just as it did under the spectacularly corrupt Rowan Metrovelli, who was the rector under Shevardnadze, who, by the way, I just saw walking in the street yesterday. And the exact same as it was in Komsomol times. Essentially, it's a political wing of the party. And they control a fair amount of money, by the way. Former members of the organization are often end up in the government. For example, its former head is a deputy minister of youth and sports now. And it's not the first time that they've beaten up critics. Usually no one is punished. The police had a brief investigation in the case that they just warned the students to obey the laws the next time. And there was a fairly big demonstration afterwards this past week with students who were unhappy about the decision in front of the university. Rector Sandro Kvitashvili came out of the protest, promised to punish students and set an example. He said the disciplinary committee will discuss the case, and they might fire those who are involved, although what power they have to do that, whether they would expel them from the university or whatever, is not clear, and whether or not there would be criminal proceedings. Considering how serious crime and violence is taken by the police, one would think that if there's any evidence of that, that something would happen. If not, that would certainly mean something. So far, there has been no punishment. On Monday, Jim McDermott, a Democratic congressman from Washington State, introduced the Republic of Georgia Democracy Act of 2012, which would require the U.S. to cut off all aid to Georgia unless parliamentary elections are carried out in a free, fair, and competitive manner. Joshua Kuseta has an article about it in Eurasianet saying that Ivanishvili's Washington lobby is starting to pay off. The author said that the most striking thing about the bill is its emphasis on Ivanishvili. The bill mentions the billionaire 13 times in its 9 pages, mentioning no other politician other than Misha Saakashvili, who it refers to as its increasingly dictatorial control over Georgia's government, and refers to Saakashvili's regime. This is really kind of silly. I mean, I don't think this thing is going to pass, and who knows what the deal is with Jim McDermott. He's not a young guy. He's been in Congress for many, many years. I don't really know what this achieves. And, you know, having the U.S. Congress get involved in things like this is, I don't know. I'm not really sure how useful this this is, and which lobbying organizations, have built this healthy relationship with Jim McDermott of Washington State, newly excited about democracy in Georgia. But anyway, Civil.ge has an article about how it was covered by Georgian press. Also, speaking of the U.S. Congress, from one of our dedicated listeners, a very interesting transcript that's on the net of an interesting exchange between Representative Brad Sherman, Democrat of California, and Rajiv Shah, the head, or whatever they call it, the Secretary General, Senior Administrator, whatever, of USAID. And so Sherman is saying that, Georgia gets X amount of money, and that Javakheti, the region, should receive lots of, lots of those funds and this and that. He didn't really know what he was talking about, but he was just saying it was sort of like being on record during a sort of regular exchange, I think an annual or quarterly exchange, with the head of AID, and saying, we should do stuff in Javakheti, although he referred to it as Javakh. So this is the Armenian lobby, getting some guy to say something. He even said, he kind of said something. I don't really know how to pronounce this thing, and I don't really know what the heck is going on there. But anyway, Shah said, yeah, we're doing this and this and this, that there, which is sort of amazing if he actually knew that, and said, yeah, we'll be sure to take it under consideration. Interesting to see if USAID now has to actually send more than it was otherwise to Javakheti. Civil.ge reports, as well as a very good blog post by our favorite blogger, Yorgi Lomsadze, about the NDI survey that was, as is traditionally done, leaked to the Georgian press. According to the leak, 47% of respondents say they would vote for the ruling National Movement Party if parliamentary elections were held tomorrow. Followed by the Ivanishvili-led coalition, which had only 10%. Georgia Dream released a statement saying that they distrust the results. Quote, on the one hand, the methodology and the format of holding and issuing the polls out, on the other hand, manipulating the results by the nationwide TV stations have led to a loss of trust towards the organization and a significant part of society, end quote, reads the statement. Although when NDI announced that 70% of respondents said that Ivanishvili should be allowed to retain his citizenship, they said everything was great and they loved it. This is a little ridiculous. I mean, I know that the polls were done by CRC, which is the most reputable polling firm around, and have no reason to disbelieve the numbers, don't think that they were fiddled, and it's just... First of all, it's a little bit sad that the only thing anybody cares about is the horse race aspect of this. I mean, when the whole purpose of the poll was to look at issues. I mean, the content of the poll, they just asked that so that people could run crosstabs. They didn't run crosstabs with the public, but they did with the parties themselves to find out what issues they cared about, how that had changed over time. And there was some quite interesting stuff about, about what people had to say about the issues. Nowhere covered in any of the press what Georgians think about issues. The only thing anybody cared about was the 10%. That's just not good. And it's also not good for Georgian Dream to, have such a hissy fit about that. I mean, 10%. I mean, sorry, do something about it or think about something more useful to say about that. Or, you can even blame various externalities, but, shooting the messenger seems immature. U.S. Ambassador designate to Georgia, Richard Norland, outlined priority areas for U.S. cooperation with its reliable partner, Georgia. I was using air quotes there with reliable partner. During a confirmation hearing in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on March 21st, pretty quick Senate confirmation hearing. Good to see the Senate speeding things along. Saying that the upcoming elections would be a very important litmus test for Georgia's NATO aspirations. I don't know what a litmus test is, really, to tell you the truth. I don't even know what litmus is. What is it, a chemical? Anyway, I think of little pieces of paper turning color, but I don't know what that really means. And, NATO always says that they really care about that, but I don't know the mechanism by which they care about that. Georgia's Afghanistan commitment seems to be strong enough that if the elections are a complete disaster, I don't know what NATO's going to do about it. Are they going to say anything, or they'd just be like, oh, we secretly don't like you anymore. I don't know. But he also talked about the Chamber of Control, which is, quote, drawing a lot of concern, end quote. There are reports of harassment of opposition candidates that trouble us deeply, end quote, Norland said. He said defense cooperation will continue between the two countries. Quote, our plan for security assistance and military engagement with Georgia are to support Georgia's defense reforms to train and equip Georgian troops for participating in the ISAF mission and advance Georgia's NATO interoperability. And then the Kremlin said, oh, militarization of Georgia, and, we don't like it, and this is bad, and, the usual Russian stuff. Georgia National Security Council published on its website the documents submitted by Irakli Alassani about the alleged paramilitary formations going on in San Magrelo. It included Alassani's letter to the NSC, attached a list of names, a list of locations in Zugdidi. It's not exactly clear what all of this stuff means. Democracy and Freedom Watch reports that this week two representatives of Alassani's party in Zugdidi were arrested. The party says that their arrest is because of the statements regarding military formations. I don't. Who knows what's going on with these alleged militias? I think there were a lot of people immediately that were sort of blamed Alassani for sort of stirring up trouble. And as we mentioned last week, his comment about Homs was ridiculous and bad. It'd be good if we get some explanation as to what's going on here. And who knows? Maybe we won't get that explanation. On the other hand, San Magrelo is a mess, and there really does from my impression is that there's a significant amount of fear and intimidation in San Magrelo of those affiliated with the opposition. Maya Panchakidze, spokesperson of Georgian Dream, held a press conference saying that the government actually is doing these paramilitary groups, and that's bad. Civil.ge reports that Abkhazians are concerned about these groups. Elections were held in South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Itar Tass reports that Abkhazia elected 20 MPs, while South Ossetia will hold a second round to elect the president. It will be between David Sanakoev and Leonid Tibilov. On the day of the elections, Alla Gioyeva talked to the BBC and said that she was held in the hospital not because of her health conditions, but the police had just wanted to limit her access. It was only the night before the elections that she was allowed to leave the hospital. Democracy and Freedom Watch has an interesting story about the underrepresentation of ethnic minorities in the newly elected Abkhaz parliament. The relations between ethnic Abkhaz and other groups in there, particularly Armenians, is quite important. There was a census done several years ago that showed that there were more Armenians in Abkhazia than Abkhaz, and they didn't, as a consequence, release the disaggregated results of that. But certainly lots of ethnic complications there between the not many Abkhaz and the others that are around. A Finnish company called Hunka was supposed to start some construction works in Abkhazia connected with the Winter Olympics that is preposterously being held in Sochi in 2014. Let's hope it doesn't snow. But the Georgian government managed to talk them out of it, supposedly, according to the government-sponsored TV stations. 19th round of Geneva talks started yesterday. They'll talk about non-use of force and security mechanisms, and I think Georgia is going to talk about cultural heritage in Abkhazia. There's some problems there. Reuters reported that an Iranian arms broker, Amir Hussein Ardabil, who's arrested during a U.S. Homeland Security sting, was deported back to Iran on Tuesday after serving 4.5 years in custody. He was arrested during a U.S. undercover operation in Georgia in October 2007. Ardabili pleaded guilty to attempting to buy restricted military-grade radar gyroscopes and cockpit computers deployed in the F-4 fighter jet. Misha was in Seoul, Korea, where he attended the Nuclear Safety Summit. He gave a speech saying that there are concerns about smuggling of nuclear material in and around Russia's occupied territories in Georgia, that the Georgian government is incapable of controlling. He says, we don't have any information about these readings, but it may not only be drug trafficking going through there, but also possibly nuclear materials. South Korea said that it will open an embassy in Tbilisi. Ivanishvili told Der Spiegel online that he was insulted that the foreign minister, that the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Guido, who visited two weeks ago, invited him to a meeting with other opposition party representatives, and that's why he didn't go to the meeting, which is, you know, a little ridiculous since, I mean, let's be real, the German foreign minister is a big shot and can do whatever he wants. And saying that you're insulted because you're included with a group of other politicians is, you know, probably not such a smart thing to do. Georgian Dream said that it was against the construction of the Azizim Mosque in Batumi, according to netgazeti.ge. As anybody knows, anyone with Georgian connection knows, Ivanishvili advertises on Facebook a lot, and now so does Misha. So what happened was, Ivanishvili started advertising, got a ton of likes, and went well ahead of Misha, who got quite nervous and then started advertising. The other thing that happened that I've now heard from a couple of different people is that all state employees, including those that are quite elderly and don't spend a whole lot of time on computers or have ever really heard of Facebook, have been given lessons on how to set up Facebook accounts in order to like Misha. Which they're now doing. So if you have a crowd of older friends that are showing up, that might be friend requests. That might be the reason. At last count, it was 139,000 to 119,000 or something like that. Batumelebi reports on the delayed process of checking voter lists in Ajada. They found an example of an apartment where only two people live, and the voters list had 75 registered there. Civil.ge reports that the editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine, Revaz Sakevarishvili, has quit his job because of censorship. When he decided to publish an article about Ivanishvili, he was pushed to completely remove the story. Forbes Georgia is owned by Gagik Yegaizarian, who is friends with Gela Bezhuashvili, head of the Foreign Intelligence Service for Georgia. His brother, Dato Bezhuashvili, is a successful businessman. Forbes denies the allegations. Media.ge reports that Liberali will come out again in April. It will be a weekly 8-page newspaper and cost 50 Georgian tetri for those in Tbilisi, while those outside of Tbilisi will get it as an insert in local newspapers, Kaheti, Mereti, Guria, Ajara, and Samskha Javakheti. It'll be delivered with those papers, which is an interesting model, and let's see how it goes. Tableau magazine has a report on the status of higher education institutions like Tbilisi State University, the Art Institute, those sorts of things. They are now they are entrepreneurial, non-commercial entity. You know, Ruda says this. Nick Rudua, the Minister of Culture, says that this is in order to give them more sort of freedom and responsibility. But in reality, they're overseen by a Council of Regents, as it's being called, which is a group of deputy ministers. So the government really continues to have complete control over them while giving them more responsibility for dealing with themselves fiscally. We'll see which has been a problem in the past. But I don't know. This Council of Regents seems like you're sort of having it both ways. I mean, either they're independent or they're not, but we'll see. There was a big botnet. I don't know what botnets are, but it's some kind of weird computer Trojan horse thing found affecting computers in Georgia using keywords related to spy stuff like, I don't know, FSB and CIA and that sort of stuff. Seemed to be quite sophisticated, repeats itself. It can, you know, do audio and video and all sorts of things like that. Most interesting part about it is that it was found, you know, quite a number of months ago by the government of Georgia and was allowed to continue operating. They didn't shut it down. So there's a lot of speculation on who's doing this. Is this criminals that were using it in order to get information for blackmailing? Was it the Georgian government that was doing it? I mean, who, you know, where did this come from? Nobody really knows, but it was evidently quite a very quite a sophisticated one. Parliament initiated a new bill, according to which physical entities, meaning human beings, who have no employees are freed from the obligation of using cash registers until the 1st of July 2013. That's good. Nice little economic stimulus there before the elections. This past Tuesday, the Parliament approved the last and final reading of the bill according to which racial, linguistic, religious, national, ethnic, sexual, and political circumstances can be regarded as an aggravated circumstance while committing a crime. An opposition MP, Dimitri Lord-Kipanidze, presented a new bill on the social protection of the unemployed. Georgian members of parliament met Brazilian senators and talked about relations between Georgia and Brazil. There's also a meeting in a couple of weeks in Brasilia of the Open Government Partnership, which is a thing that we've mentioned before. It's where governments say what they're going to do in order to become more transparent. They sign on to some commitments that they themselves have designed and then report on carrying out those commitments. So there'll be a number of NGOs, including representatives from the hardest working NGO in Georgia, Transparency International Georgia, who will go see what. Now, the original Georgian government proposals were really pretty lame. They were essentially, you know, very simple, broad, general stuff that the Georgian government was going to do anyway. So we'll find out over the next couple of weeks whether the Georgian government's really going to do anything to substantially increase governmental transparency or whether it will be another dog and pony show where they talk about how they reformed the police and the civil registry and all that. The supervisory board of JSC Telasi has appointed Ashot Manukyan as the Telasi director general. Shareholder meeting has decided that 24.5% of the shares will be given to the Georgian government. The remainder will go to Interrail UES. They have the Telasi had significant debts to the state budget, and that's what it's about. Georgia plans to join an agreement on wine labeling, which unites member countries in the World Wine Trade Group. GBC reports that the United States Patent and Trademark Office has registered 12 indications of origin of Georgian wine, including Sinandali, Manavi, Kins Marouli, Tvishi, Kvareli, Kahuri, Taliani, Mukuzani, Akhasheni, and so on. A 25-meter, and 25 meters is a lot of meters, 25-meter Chacha Tower will be built in Batumi. It'll be a fountain where instead of water, local Chacha will run once in a week for 15 minutes. As Net Gazette reports, this brilliant idea belongs to the head of local city council, Gheorghe Kirtadze, who said that it will popularize local cha-cha. Talks with the EU on visa-free movement will open early this summer, according to commerçant.ge. IMF and Georgian government reached an agreement, I mean, among the staff, not yet among the politicians, but it should go through all right, according to which Georgia will be able to get an IMF credit line of $387 million. Could come in handy. And Georgia's debt ratios are not so horrible, you know, compared to a lot of places in the EU and, you know, even the United States. A German supermarket chain called Den Haag, which is in the Netherlands, which doesn't make much sense. It's sort of like the biggest sort of department store in Spain being called El Corte Inglés, the English court. But okay, whatever. They're going to start a supermarket chain in Georgia, according to commerçant.ge. Also in commerçant.ge, a new neighborhood, we're not sure where, of 230,000 hectares will be built in Tbilisi. Oh dear, we'll have to see where that is. More urban sprawl, just what we need. Trams may return to Kutaisi, according to an announcement by Kutaisi City Hall. There's a mayor's convention according to which Kutaisi, along with EU countries, committed itself to protect the city's environment. Notaries have been granted the right to register marriages and divorce. Couple of announcements. On Saturday, the 31st of March, that will be the day after tomorrow, there will be a solidarity campaign in six different locations of Tbilisi. If you want to support human rights, go to one location, Marjanashvili Square for environment, Avlavati Square for free media, near Vake Park for education rights, the round square between Vera and Vake for free and fair elections, and on Tavisuplebe Moidani, you can support cultural heritage. But then everyone will end up at Gudiashvili Square at 5 p.m. Film Festival of the South Caucasus is held in Yerevan, Baku, and Tbilisi with support from the Embassy of Great Britain until the 31st of March. 12 films will be with the six-day film festival. The Literature Museum has information about this. So, last week's question. On Nowruz, Tbilisi was packed with Iranians on holiday. The night of Nowruz on Tuesday in Sabartalo at the Sporti Sakhli, it featured an Iranian who left at the age of 10 and moved to which northern European city? Nobody knew the answer to that, amazingly. But the answer is he moved to Malmö in Sweden, where he still lives. So the question for this week: who was the first king from the Ashakiani or Arasid dynasty? Who was the first king from the Ashakiani or Arasid dynasty? That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's TXTBUK. Email is tblpod@gmail.com. Send us all and everything. We look forward to hearing from you. Please post on the forums if you are too chicken, even to put in a fake name like Mevludi Khajapuridze. People are welcome to send in announcements of anything they want people to know about. Now, as I'm sure you heard, the Emperor of Bluegrass, Earl Scruggs, died at 88 years of age yesterday in Nashville. If there's one thing we can all agree the Caucasus needs a whole lot more of, it is banjo picking. This is Foggy Mountain Breakdown by Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs in 1948.